Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. The Nepalese Meditation Bowl is chiming, and that means it's time for The Art of the CEO, the show for people who enjoy the challenge of business and who want to do it a little better. I'm your host, Bart Jackson, the Hieronymus Bosch of business. And whether you are an executive director of a nonprofit trying to make the overwhelming task of parenting a little bit easier, like Shuri, or a valuation pro trying to bring some rational reality into the M&A process like Tracy, we're here to bring you the sage counsel of business masters to help your career and your ventures. So every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, The Art of the CEO streams magically through the mightily misunderstood realms of cyberspace, where you may listen and download it by visiting blogtalkradio.com/theartoftheceo. Once more, that's blogtalkradio.com/theartoftheceo. Anyway, we invite you to visit and explore for your benefit. Now, today's episode is called The Supreme Court and the Affordable Care Act, Up to the Plate. Yes, today we're going to handle the hot potato of the Affordable Care Act and the Supreme Court's current second shot at trying to crush it in 32 of America's 50 states. We're going to discuss the history, we're going to go over the real issues, and we'll taste just a tiny soupçon of the politics, not too much. And most importantly, we'll look at the court's decision and what it will mean to you as an individual of business. And frankly, folks, we are truly blessed to have as our Virgil on this infernal voyage one of the nation's best informed and least biased authorities on the ACA, Mr. John Sarno. Now, John's a good friend and a noted attorney who teaches law and many of the healthcare litigation and legislation acts at the New Jersey Institute of Technology Business School, and he is also the president of the Employers Association of New Jersey. And by the way, you got to read his books, but more about that later. But before we whip up this sort of pot of healthcare and judicial controversy, let's take a moment out there to supply everyone with a few utensils for today's feast of wisdom. First, as I always do, allow me to remind everybody hearing my voice that the good Lord has gifted you with the title and privileges of Chief Executive Officer of yourself. And that's the most important position you'll ever really hold in your career. So let me ask you, is this going to be the day that you sit down and enumerate your many abilities and think of some ways to cultivate them? Or will you continue to distract your real purpose by comparing yourself against others? The choice is truly yours. Now, for our second utensil, it's time to dip into a little laughter and take a scriptural recitation from the 101 Best Business Quips books. So let me plow through here. Okay, here we go. This is number 78. The trouble with my compensation is that my board insists on paying me only what I'm worth. No one can live on that. So, as an afterthought, if your pay doesn't match your performance, you have a right to complain. But if your pay doesn't match what others in your position are getting, oh, for heaven's sake, stop griping and figure out how to outperform them. And as a third utensil, perhaps we should call today's utensils the dueling fork. Right now, we are going to give you the answers to last week's business quotation. Now, today, before we leave the air, we'll broadcast yet another quotation, and we invite you to email us the name of the author as you believe him or her to be. Simply write down the author of that quote and email it to info@bartsbooks.com. That's info@bartsbooks.com. And if you're correct, we are going to send you a marvelous gift freshly torn from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And so last week, last week's quote, that is the individual who said he had the calm confidence of a Christian with four aces, was spoken by none other than the very wry and insightful humorist and steamboat pilot, Mr. Mark Twain. So now, let us dig into today's Feast of Wisdom and meet the man who is going to tell us all about the Affordable Care Act, the Supreme Court, and what outcome we all need to be praying for. John, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great, Bart, and thanks very much for that introduction. Although I must say that I probably can identify more with Dante than Virgil, but I appreciate the intro.
Right, okay. Well, yes, I think we may all be the bewildered Dantes, but we certainly are going to need your guidance. Anyway, John, now you are officially the president, but you're unofficially the motivating powerhouse behind the Employers Association of New Jersey. So could you tell us about the EANJ and what are the benefits that it brings to the employers who join?
Well, the Employers Association of New Jersey is a trade group comprised of employers of the state, and we're dedicated exclusively to helping our members be better employers through the programs and through our counseling. And, of course, what I think probably the keynote benefit would be access to premium health care plans for employees, the Affiliated Physicians and Employers Health Plan. 2,000 employers are now enrolled in the plan. We insure 22,000 lives, and we enroll about 8 to 10 new members a month. So that's a premier benefit of ours.
Maybe they'll be taking you to the Supreme Court pretty soon.
I do have a anyway, case before the Supreme Court, but that's a different topic. It's not a healthcare case. Maybe another day.
Another day, let us hope not. John, now I recall when I first interviewed you about the ACA, more than a couple of years back, shall we say, you were one of only two individuals I could find who had actually read this 1,000-plus page document. And so kind of just for fun, could you tell us just one or maybe two particular items that reading all through it that you picked up that probably a lot of other folks missed?
Well, the one thing I read resulted in EANJ growing 80% last year, and
that
that was a provision in the act which set out certain insurance mandates, and that was in 2010, and there was a grandfather to 2014. But anyone who read that provision would clearly understand that two-thirds of New Jersey's employers would be getting cancellation notices in November 2013. In other words, the plans that they had, yes, the plans that they had were non-compliant with the law. But the Obama administration, because of the disruption of the market and employers generally, grandfathered those plans to January 2014. So thousands of employers in New Jersey, as they were leading up to their renewal in 2014, got cancellation notices. And, of course, they either had to buy up or stop offering insurance to their employees. And we had launched our plan in 2011, the healthcare trust, and we were right there offering the alternative to the Obamacare plans. So it turns out that EANJ is really the alternative to the Obamacare small group mandate.
Oh, my gosh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it always shows pays to read, so no matter how heavy the tome.
I'll be honest and say I was teaching a class, and that was my motivation for reading the law. I was not in search of a business model, and I was not in search for a business opportunity. But as you and I have discussed in the past, reading is beneficial for many, many reasons.
Truly, truly. Yeah, even if it's not bedtime stuff. John, now the Affordable Affordable Care Act has come under probably more debate and with more misunderstanding than any piece of legislation I can recall in a long time. And this is a toughie, but I'm going to ask if you could give us sort of the nutshell version of this federally facilitated healthcare marketplace, which we call Obamacare,
right,
among other things. What really is it, and what does it really do?
Well, it's also probably the most litigious statute we've had in a while. But the
no doubt.
I think the crux of the issue is subsidies to individuals,
right,
to buy their own insurance. The whole one of the main purposes of the act is to allow people who need it, who have medical conditions, to be able,
right,
to buy their insurance. And that insurance,
right,
is very expensive. And there's also there's also folks who just don't make enough money to buy their own insurance. So a part of the act subsidizes these private purchases of plans.
Okay. Okay.
The law, on the face, the law says if a state enacts its exchange, its insurance,
right,
sales program, if you will, then its citizens will get access to the subsidies.
Yes,
but because of the political split in the country, and because,
right,
of the litigation that occurred, 34 states or so decided not to create their own sales exchange, and instead.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the federal government agency, runs those states' exchanges. So, believe it or not, whether the Affordable Care Act lives or dies in 34 states hinges,
right,
on a few words in a tens of thousands of word law. It's incredible, but true.
Now, okay, that's what I wanted to get into. But first, before we get into that, just to give folks an idea about how many. You probably know how many New Jersey residents have taken up with the ACA, and maybe you know how many nationally have. How many people nationally, or at least within the state of New Jersey, have picked up Affordable Care?
Well, in New Jersey, it's just shy of 110,000 people. So that means,
right,
that
there's
roughly 110,000 people in New Jersey who have insurance who would not have otherwise had it. 85% of that number get a subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about probably 100,000 people in New Jersey. And nationally, it's about 7 million.
I'd heard the 7 million, yes. So we're talking something really here, something huge here, and something that's going to affect. Right. Well, now, let's. So the 32 or 34 states that don't have. That have not adopted their own programs or have not established their own programs are facing or getting the subsidies through the. On the national level, and so what's the actual issue? What brought this all of that fact? What brought that to the Supreme Court's attention? And what? How did
it
come up?
Well, it came up because there are groups, nonprofit groups who, essentially, their mission is to torpedo the law. I mean, that's
right.
That's what essentially what their purpose is. So
we see it all the time.
Yeah. So several people were found in one of the Carolinas who could have had standing to file this lawsuit, but these individuals are not paying for the lawsuit. The lawsuit being paid for by money contributed to this nonprofit group. That's what's funding the lawsuit. And of course, all of that is perfectly permissible, perfectly First Amendment protected, and
it's devious if legal.
No, it's I wouldn't even call it devious. Really, maybe that's just my lawyer's hat. But it's a legitimate way. It's a legitimate way to challenge a law.
Okay, I guess my journalist hat would call it devious, but a lawyer's hat is perhaps a bit more straightforward.
the other main thing, it's not just about people losing their health care.
Right.
That's big.
Yeah.
And people will suffer. But the market, during the Supreme Court argument, the Solicitor General, the government's lawyer, argued that if the rug is pulled out from these subsidies, the healthcare markets in those states, including New Jersey, will collapse. It's called a death spiral. And the reason for that is that the carriers will still be legally required to sell insurance to people with pre-existing conditions.
This is a major change for the private sector as well, right?
The insurance industry, which is quasi-private, quasi-public, it's really a very regulated industry in New Jersey. They and around the country, they have organized their business models around the Affordable Care Act.
I see.
So the first bullet they missed was the first go around before the Supreme Court, which required everyone, including healthy people, to buy insurance,
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, that's where the carriers were depending on, because you can't write insurance for sick people without having healthy people in the pool.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, if you're going to, right, so that's what brought this, I remember that was a big fight. Now, go ahead.
Absolutely. No, I was just going to say, just in closing, the carriers in New Jersey will lose 100,000 customers if there isn't subsidized health care.
Right. I think this is I want to talk about that affordability in the literal sense, not the legal sense, when we get back. But now, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the midpoint of our show, and I just want everyone here to know that we all are listening to the Art of the CEO radio show, which is streaming live from blogtalkradio.com. And since we've come to the middle section of today's feast, let's take a brief sorbet, if we may, and it's time for me to introduce to you the company by whose good graces we are here today. And that firm is Prometheus Publishing, creator of Bart's Books Ultimate Business Guides. And you may visit Bart's Books to enjoy a wide wealth of practical wisdom from business masters. And this very day, Prometheus Publishing invites you to come visit their bookstore and take a look at one of their books, Behind Every Successful Woman Is Herself. And this is a marvelous, fun career and business boosting guide that includes expertise from a lot of the top executives all around the world. And it's enjoyable, and it gives good examples, and it allows you to infer many, many good bits of advice that will prove to be good tools. So, why not visit bartsbooks.com, that's bartsbooks.com, browse the bookstore, and get a nice gift copy for the graduate or for yourself. Behind Every Successful Woman Is Herself. Now, ladies and gentlemen, at this point, and all those merry souls with fatigued eyes who are glazing over as we come closer and closer to vacations, we are back with the Art of the CEO show on blogtalkradio.com and our guide to the Affordable Care Act and so many things with healthcare, Mr. John Sarno. John, where does the employer come in all of this? What is it? I mean, if the ACA does shut down, what's in the majority of states, one of which will be, your own New Jersey, what is this going to mean to the larger and to the smaller business owner?
Well, I think the burden of the law has fallen on smaller companies because of reasons 50 or less employees. And by the way, the definition of small employer changes next year to include up to 100 employees.
So more people will come under whatever umbrella is falling down upon them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So prior to the law, employers were able to buy what sometimes are referred to skinny plans or bare bones plans with
sure.
high deductibles, with lifetime limits, with annual limits, significant copays. And for some workforces, that works well. Typically, if they're younger and do not have disproportionate amount
of
medical condition, right? So
right.
a lot of employers, in fact, 2/3 of employers, as I said earlier, bought plans that, as of really 2010, but the wake up call, was 2014 because of that grandfathering I explained.
Right. Yes.
Most of those employers had to buy up. So if there's no Affordable Care Act, they can start buying down again.
Oh, I see. So are you saying this, that if the Affordable Care shuts down, the employer will get a greater, in one sense, he's going to get a greater variety of things to choose from, but on the other hand, since many of the insurance companies themselves are going to start collapsing and so forth, he just may not have quite as much to choose from anyway, right?
Well, yeah, it's clearly a huge impact on the market, but the case we're talking about won't have a direct impact on employer plans. It's really going to have an impact on the individuals who are buying their own. So even if this case is decided in favor of the plaintiffs, the carriers will still have to comply with the Affordable Care Act, which is to offer those plans that comply with the law, and employers will still have to buy them.
So because that's what the insurers will be offering. That's what you're saying? Because they have to offer.
What the plaintiffs are trying to do here are they're trying to wreck a major pillar of the act, which is the subsidies. And there'll be seven million people who will get hurt. The insurance companies though will still be stuck with the mandates. So they're trying to knock down a house by wrecking one of the pillars.
Well, to continue your metaphor, I think we'd both be blind and lying if we didn't say to ourselves that they're trying to wreck the builder as well as the house. I mean, the ACA has been a partisan political football since it was first even conceived, and the non-presidential side of the aisle, in 2014 alone, made up like 250 motions to shut down the ACA, and they were not successful. So and now that they've maneuvered it into the Supreme Court. And we know that they call this an act of court, that we've got at least four justices who are simply salivating to kill the ACA. So what is your take? Will this judicial decision be one of just one more partisan push, or can we hope for an honest assessment of need and law and benefit?
I would think that there's one historic analogy, and that's the National Labor Relations Act, which was passed in the 1930s. And we're litigating law, the labor law, to this day. And if you look at the political war that went on pre, during, and after, it's very similar to what we're seeing with the Affordable Care Act. There are people who just believe that both the National Labor Relations Act and the Affordable Care Act is government run amok. And of course, as a lawyer, I can make that case legally.
right.
that it's unsound. But as a professor, you also have to see the politics and pay attention to the social commentary. So.
Yeah, well, there is one thing. I mean, if it's doing 7 million people a lot of good, my personal opinion is I could stand a little amuckness. But recently, speaking as we continue just a little bit more on the politics, and I don't want to get too much of this, but recently New Jersey's own governor, Chris Christie, while he was presidentially stumping around in New Hampshire, referred to the Affordable Care Act as, quote, a failed program, unquote, that required, quote, fixing by Congress. Now,
right.
I'm curious, because you would know, do you think this is going to win him public favor, or should we be looking for some sort of rapid backpedaling retraction coming up real soon?
Yeah, it's a curious statement, because if you look at the Republican primary, every single one of those 15 or 16 candidates are running on repealing the act. And as you said, Congress, it's the House at least, has spent a tremendous amount of effort on vote after vote after vote. I think that's something that we can probably say in the general election, right? Because because in the general election, you're trying to, you know, be more of a consensus builder. But I think to say that in a Republican primary is a little curious.
Yeah,
when everybody else. Literally, one of the biggest applause lines is we're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it seems like it's dangerous, particularly for that party. John, the United States is one of the very few first world nations that I know of where its health care is so inextricably linked with employment and jobs.
Right.
At your job. And we've worked this way ever since way back when the incipient Blue Cross picked up the teachers union back in 1923 down in Texas. But at any rate, many people feel this is a misstep. And I'm wondering if, A, you feel that way, but and more importantly, is there any way that we can unlink the employer from the healthcare process? Or should we?
Well. First of all, the fact that you're right, it's inextricably linked to employers, was created by the IRS in World War II. Employers were not allowed to raise wages during the war because there were wage and price controls, but they were still competing. They were still competing for employees because they were running two shifts to win the war. So employers started to provide health care benefits as an inducement for employees. And then the IRS ruled that benefits were not wages, and that's what started the system. And then of course industry wanted to remain union free. So one of the ways to remain union free was to offer benefits. And the key thing here is that the tax code subsidizes employer insurance of about $400 billion a year. Because
that's true. Yeah, you can take off. I know the deductions.
The employer deducts its expense of the health care and the employee.
Right.
In the employee. So these subsidies that we're talking about under the Affordable Care Act are minuscule, are nothing compared to the billions of subsidy that employers get and individuals get to under the tax code. That's the real.
Oh, John, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Here. That's the big government. That's the big government that is subsidizing the market. It's not the Affordable Care Act. It's the tax code. So the only way you can change how healthcare is paid for and delivered is to change the tax code. And, of course, the Affordable Care Act does not do that.
Right. John, I'd love to go on with this a lot more to help to really clarify. You've brought up some fabulous points, but I'm afraid we've come sadly, to the end of our show, and we're going to have you back on. That's all there is to it. And we want to have people hear about your previous book, The Perils of Prosperity, and we want to hear about the new book. But I'm afraid today we're going to have to say goodbye, and thank you very much for enlightening us all. So
well,
I hope it's been fun.
The decision will be released shortly after the show airs, so maybe we'll be back.
Okay. Great. John, so I thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, to round out today's show, allow me to leave you with today's business quotations. And who was the person who said, "The price of inaction is far greater than the cost of a mistake"? And as a hint, this active lady CEO's many successes have been peppered with her fair share of failures, from which she always rebounds with a smile. So if you and remember, if you know the name of the author of this quote, just send that to info@bartsbooks.com. That's info at bartsbooks.com to win an absolutely astounding life-changing gift from the dungeons of Bart's Book Bookstore. And finally, as a parting shot, in the words of my wife's husband, if you really believe that you belong to the master race, the chosen people, or you're the smartest guy in the room, the odds of you ever learning anything are slim indeed. So, to all you faithful and playful listeners, I hope you've enjoyed The Art of the CEO today as much as I have. And remember, you may download this and all our shows at blogtalkradio.com/theartoftheceo. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, it has been a privilege. I thank you.